Our next case for argument is 23-1972, Baker v. McDonough.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Albert Bacharach. I represent the veteran appellant, Ms. Baker. This is probably one of your favorite kinds of cases. Ms. Baker is alleging that there was clear and unmistakable error back in 1992. When the Veterans Administration failed to consider any of the actual findings of the U.S. Air Force, and on their own decided that the veteran did not suffer from multiple sclerosis. Factually, the veteran was serving in the U.S. Air Force and developed a number of signs and symptoms. The U.S. Air Force, through a series of medical tests, decided back in December of 1991 that the veteran suffered from multiple sclerosis, and on the sheet that they used for deciding on medical retirement, they also assigned the exact number for multiple sclerosis that the Veterans Administration uses for a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. So she was medically retired and then filed almost immediately for a number of service-connected disabilities, including multiple sclerosis. In the September 1992 rating decision, there's clear and unmistakable error because when you read through the entire decision, there is no discussion whatsoever of the Air Force's findings that the veteran suffered from multiple sclerosis, or as the Air Force said, probable multiple sclerosis. What happened was, first, the Veterans Administration had a doctor examine the veteran. That doctor determined that he couldn't say she had multiple sclerosis. Internally then, there was a document from the Veterans Administration that said, you have to actually read her C-file. You have to read the military records that are included as part of the veteran's record before you make a determination. So that's why there's a second opinion, with regard to the multiple sclerosis. And that second opinion, completely misstates what the findings were with regard to the Air Force, and never mentions that the Air Force had found that the veteran suffered from a probable multiple sclerosis. So, in the tiny world of Q error, all the tiny things that could actually be Q error, one of them is the failure to actually weigh all of the evidence. That you don't consider all of the evidence, you know, you don't weigh all the evidence, and that's what happens in this case. That makes the decision from the board finding that it's not cure error arbitrary and capricious, because the regulation clearly says that cure error is created by the failure to consider all of the
But the board made a fact finding, did it not, that the RO in 1992 did have all of the facts in front of it when it made its ratings decision in 1992.
But the rating decision has to tell you the reasons and basis of the decision. And
I guess what I'm wondering is I'm sure you well know, is the scope of our jurisdiction on these veterans' benefits appeals is extremely limited. You already had one appeals court review your case at the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, and so we're pretty much confined here to consider legal errors, and I've been waiting to hear from you today what is the legal error that was made that demands us to either to find Q under these circumstances.
Arguing it as a legal error, you would say that the statutes under Title 38 and the regulations under 38 CFR require that everything be considered. And a statement that everything was considered is not proof that anything was considered. So this court and the court below should have gone back to the 1992 decision. It runs for about 4 pages. It's in the record on appeal from 5242 to 5246. Nowhere in the decision, the reasons and basis for the decision, do they discuss that the Air Force made a finding that the veteran suffers from multiple sclerosis.
And that sounds like clear and unmistakable error, but how is it a legal error?
Well, it's a misapplication of the regulation. The regulation says you have to do A, B, C, and they skipped B. They went from A to C and said there's no Q error. I understand that the VA, and for that matter the Veterans Court, nobody likes Q error cases, because the result of Q error case is like having a time machine. We go all the way back to 1992, and we redo it as if we're back in 1992, and then everything goes forward in time. It's like one of those movies with the alternate timelines. And so it greatly disturbs everything that has gone from 1992 until actually I secured multiple sclerosis benefits for around 2014. But it has irritated me since 2014 that the veteran has not received what the veteran's entitled to. And so the legal errors, the failure to correctly interpret and apply both the statutory rules with regard to Q and the regulatory rules with regard to Q, and the regulatory rules that and the decisions of, I believe, this court as well, that the decision has to show the basis of the decision. You have to set out what the facts and findings are for the decision. The entire decision says no evidence clinically or physically to substantiate a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. That's not an analysis.
What page are you on?
That would be 5242 of the record. 5242.
5242?
That's a big number.
The record before the agency, yeah.
Do you know what page of your appendix that might correspond to?
Unfortunately, it's appendix 35, but I left out the next 2 pages as well. So if all you have are the blue and gray briefs, you won't find this.
So I happen to have a copy of the rating decision. What page of the rating decision are you from?
We just started 5242. The only...
I mean, this is a... five-page document.
It is. And the only mention of multiple sclerosis, the only mention of multiple sclerosis is on page 5242. And
this is a five-page document, sir. Could you just tell me what page of the five-page document you're reading from?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. First page. 5242, first paragraph, last line. This is the only mention of multiple sclerosis in the entire decision.
Thank you. Huh? Is that what you're talking about here? There's no other page?
Please, here.
Okay.
Are you talking about examiner found no evidence clinically or physically to substantiate that DX is multiple sclerosis? Is that your sentence?
No, but that's also not an analysis. That's the examination by Dr. Denson. It's always hard to remember what the court does all the time. I do this all the time, so I'm... in the concept of compensation and pension exams, back in 1992, VA doctors did the examinations of the veterans. So what you're reading is a statement of what the VA doctor found and said. which is exactly what he found and said, and which I'm arguing, is he said, I can't say she has multiple sclerosis. That's the same doctor who they said, well, go back and look at her in service records. And then in his second decision that's not cited in here, he miscites to the Air Force. So that even if you were being generous, the decision is incomplete and unfair to the veteran because he only looked to the imaging of the veteran's brain, which was one of the parts of the process of the Air Force deciding that she had multiple sclerosis. But it wasn't the reason entirely that they decided it, and he forgot to put in the fact that the Air Force says she has multiple sclerosis. Now, technically they said probable multiple sclerosis, but probable for our purposes is she's got multiple sclerosis because, as we point out in the argument, if you're weighing evidence and one person says, I can't say she has multiple sclerosis, and the Air Force doctors say, she probably does, so far one outweighs, I can't say.
That doctor, when he or she said probable MS, also said, but did not meet all criteria for MS.
That's why it's probable.
Right.
So, with any...
I guess the point is again, where we are right now is deep in the heart of fact-finding. We really are, and the board looked at this and said, well, they've read the record and they concluded that reasonable minds differed as to whether she, in fact, suffered from multiple sclerosis. And then the Veterans Court says, we're not going to find Q because, like the board, we agree that the diagnosis was debatable at the time and there was diagnostic uncertainty. And so now we're here and I don't know, I haven't heard yet a basis for how we can, you know, within our jurisdiction that we can do something here.
Well, I think, first of all, reasonable minds cannot disagree as to whether or not she has multiple sclerosis. So, but that part of the argument goes to the case law that says that not only do you have to show that there's an error, but you have to show that the error is outcome determinative and that without the error, you would have gotten a different result. So, the failure to do something at the inception by the VA.
Can you just, can you real quick just tell me, what is the difference for the veteran here between having the effective date be 1992 when she originally filed her claim versus, I don't even know what year it was ultimately, 2012? What was it? When was it ultimately?
Ultimately, I believe it was 2014 or 15.
Okay.
That
so
we
were. Effective date is 2009?
Yeah, back to 2009.
Okay, so what's the difference for the veteran? Let me just quantify it for me. What's the difference for the veteran between an effective date of 1992 and effective date of 2009? I want to know.
Well, if the veteran was service-connected at 30% in 1992, a number of things would probably have happened. First of all, she would be arguing, as she got sicker and sicker with multiple sclerosis, that the signs and symptoms of multiple sclerosis entitled her to higher entitlement rate. As you know, the two issues for a veteran are one, to establish that the medical issue has a nexus with or is linked to their service connection, and then there's the whole scale of percentages with regard to how the VA rates that particular impairment. So you could be service-connected, and she is in 1992, if you look at that decision. She's service-connected for several issues at 0%. So what that means is we agree that you're service-connected, but we're not paying you for it, because the percentages with regard to service connection actually have to do with how much the VA believes that the particular medical issue will interfere with your ability to work.
Did you argue before either the board or the CABC anything about tie goes to the veteran kind of thing? Did you make that argument?
I'm sorry?
About how tie goes to the veteran whenever there is a...
I did not. I mean, I don't... I mean, yeah, that's a true statement, as we all know. And when the evidence is equiposed, the veteran wins. But in order for the veteran to establish Q error here, we have to establish that, I believe, we have to establish that the medical evidence available to the decider in 1992 was not completely discussed by or evaluated by.
Okay, I think we have your argument. You're all out of time, including rebuttal. I'll restore some rebuttal, but we should go ahead and hear from the government now.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
May it please the Court. Ms. Baker's appeal challenging the Veterans Court's decision should be dismissed because it's premised upon challenges to the Board's factual findings. If the Court reaches the merits, it should affirm.
Would it be a fact-finding if his argument is couched in terms of a failure to consider all relevant evidence? Is that a fact-finding or an application of law to fact, or is that a legal question?
If the argument is that the RO in 92 failed to consider the relevant evidence, that would probably be an application of the MS diagnostic code. So that would be beyond the scope of the court's jurisdiction review as well. Ultimately, though, this is a Q case, so the error would also have to be outcome determinative. So that presents another hurdle on top of that. The board did consider this point. It said the evidence was before the RO. I think it's important to note that if you look at appendix 31 and 32 and appendix 34, which are Dr. Denson's medical examination report, he does note the underlying Air Force diagnosis or the analysis done by the Air Force Medical Center. And he does note that there was some positive evidence before the...
The one thing that bothered me about this that I was trying to wrap my head around is what you're pointing to on page 31 of the appendix is what he actually notes is that her C-file... He didn't have her C-file, so he couldn't actually look at stuff himself, but he notes possible multiple sclerosis. Is there a difference between possible MS and probable MS? What does the word probable mean to you as a lawyer? What does the word probable mean?
I'm sorry, I just want to make sure I see what you're referring to. Possible MS.
It's in the middle of the page on 31, in the middle paragraph.
Thank you. Okay.
So what does the word probable... Do we both agree that the prior diagnosis, to the extent there was one, was probable multiple sclerosis?
The physical examination report uses the phrase probable MS.
Okay,
that's true. I agree with that.
Okay. So when he says the prior diagnosis was of possible MS, is he wrong? Is there a difference between the word possible and probable? You're a lawyer. I would think that your answer's got to be yes, right? Probable cause, probable. We use the word probable in a lot of circumstances in the law, and I think it has a pretty precise meaning, plus even just as a statistician, it would have a precise meaning. What does the word probable mean to you?
So I want to answer it specifically to this context.
First, I want you to, does the word probable mean?
Probable means more likely than not.
Okay.
Specifically in this context, I think one reasonable reading of the word probable as used by Dr. Velasquez at Appendix 26 is... she probably has, so I don't want to get past where the court is, but Appendix 26 is the USAF narrative report, which says, and I'm in the hospital course heading section, And the last component of that is, after discussions with the Department of Neurology, Dr. Velasquez, it was felt that the patient most likely represented multiple sclerosis, but it did not meet all the criteria. Diagnosis at this time is probable multiple sclerosis. I understand that to mean Ms. Baker does not have MS right now, but she has something that probably is going to turn into MS. I think that's consistent with not all the criteria are met at this point.
Okay, wait, hold on a sec. You say not all of the criteria are met. I mean, do you understand that DSM criteria are a sliding scale and that you don't have to meet every single one of them to have a diagnosis of something?
I think all the criteria met in turn could meet different things because there are...
But are you a doctor?
I'm not.
Am I a doctor?
We are not. Neither of us are doctors.
We're not doctors.
Neither of us are doctors.
We're not doctors. But, so, probable has a clear and unmistakable meaning in the English language. And he said probable. So, didn't they err as a factual matter? And I will hear you out on the idea that I have no ability to look at facts. But doesn't it seem pretty clear that there's a problem when the person whose statement you're relying on says, oh, I didn't actually have the underlying files that other doctor looked at, when he said possibly she has MS, when in fact the other doctor looked at the underlying files and says she probably has MS? Those feel like really different situations to me. And when the tie goes to the veteran, when we're supposed to, when we live in a universe where if all things are equal, in equipoise, the veteran should prevail, doesn't this just feel flat out wrong to you? Don't even tell me I don't have jurisdiction, because I know that.
I'm not going to get into
this. This is more a matter of, doesn't this just feel flat out wrong?
So, Your Honor's question, Chief Judge Moore, your question started with the possible MS quote on Appendix 31.
Yes.
So after that, Dr. Denson then goes back to the file and looks at it again.
And does he later, then when he looks at it again, does he actually say probable multiple? No, he doesn't.
He doesn't specifically say.
He never gets it right, does he?
He doesn't specifically say probable multiple sclerosis. What he does do is look at the actual findings, mm-hmm. and he notes one positive point, positive in the sense of likely to show MS, number one, the multiple bright areas. This is, and I'm not a doctor. I, like the court, am trying to come at this from a lay perspective. I have to. My understanding is 2 and 3 would be relevant to showing she doesn't have MS at the time. So this is very much an issue where there's evidence cutting in different directions. And Your Honor's Chief Judge Moore, your question about tie going to the runner. This is a Q context, so it has to be undebatable that the evidence was in approximate balance in 1992. That's the question. It's not whether the evidence actually was in approximate balance. It's whether it's undebatable that it was. And in light of the board's...
Well, actually, I think you're right about that, but the problem is the word probable actually makes it sound like the evidence wasn't in approximate balance. It makes it sound like the evidence actually favored the veteran. I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt by saying equipoise. I think when... And by the way, just to be clear, didn't this doctor here on page appendix 26, isn't he either a neurologist, a military neurologist, or didn't he consult with a neurological team before he wrote this? Isn't that my understanding of this report?
So Dr. Velasquez, according to this report, is a neurologist.
And what about Dr. Denson, the one that says possible, who got wrong what the neurologist said, got it wrong, no question, got it wrong. What about him? Is he a neurologist?
I'm not sure.
He's not.
I don't have any reason to think he is.
He's not.
But the RO considered in 1992. The RO got a medical opinion, and the medical opinion, if looking at factors that are relevant to MS, to my lay understanding again, but all this
you know
is...
Who's so, not a lay doctor? And who's actually a specialist in this? The guy who said she probably has MS. That's actually the best specialist in the entire record. He says probable MS. Then you get a generalist later that comes on and says, oh, that guy said possible MS.
The doctor said probable MS, but does not meet all the criteria at this time.
That's why he said probable, because she doesn't meet all
of
them.
I know you have your reasonable interpretation of the record, but couldn't another reasonable interpretation of the record, again, I understand we're in fact-finding land, is that back in 1992, the ratings officer was looking for a conclusive diagnosis of multiple sclerosis when, under the law, all that was really required was it more likely than not that Ms. Baker had multiple sclerosis?
I agree that the standard was it more likely than not. I can't look into the RO's mind as to whether they were...
But in terms of putting all this information together, it appears that we have one doctor that says probable MS. We have another doctor, Dr. Denson, who says, I'm not convinced she has MS. Ultimately saying, I cannot say that she conclusively has MS. And then the ratings officer comes in after all of this and says, I don't think there's not enough here to prove MS. And so in that way, the ratings official, maybe Dr. Denson isn't required to apply the applicable law, but certainly the ratings officer is on the more likely than not standard of evidence.
That was the standard that governed the ratings official. I don't think there's an indication that the...
I'm just asking, is that a reasonable reading of all this record? I know you have your counter reading, yeah. But I'm trying to understand another way of understanding all this that seems to track the way the chief was thinking about the case.
I don't think it's a totally unreasonable reading of the record. I think there's...
Thank you.
I think there's evidence...
The concession of all concessions.
I think there's an evidence that cuts in different directions. But that is... I also do want to note, though, about the RO, because there were some allegations of bad faith on the part of VA here, that Ms. Baker was service-connected for vertigo back in 1992. So it's not like she was denied anything. And it's also, you know, that the RO did go out and get a medical opinion. So I think this is all consistent with good faith. I understand Your Honor's point. But the point of Q is not to look at, was everything explained, you know, precisely and perfectly. The point is, was there an undebatable error that was outcome determinative? And in light of the board's findings here, it just doesn't rise to that standard. Happy to answer any other questions the court may have. If not, we ask that the court dismiss or alternatively affirm. Thank you.
Since it seems that the court's much more worried about its jurisdiction than the actual issue of the case, I'd like to say that I believe you do have jurisdiction because everything below you is a violation of either 38 U.S.C. 7111 or 38 CFR 2205A, all of which provide that if the evidence establishes that an error has been made, then the board and the Court of Veterans Claims needs to actually correct the error. In this case, nobody's correcting the error.
Yeah, but the problem is I only have the ability to correct legal errors. You're right. The CAVC could have corrected a factual error or an application of law, like the regulation and the statute that you cited, an application of law to the facts of the case. The board could have done it. The CAVC could have done it. They didn't.
So that, I'm sorry.
I'm not allowed
interrupting.
To. I'm not allowed
well,
to.
Respectfully, as lawyers say to the court, I don't believe that's correct. I believe that your determination as the Federal Circuit that the Veterans Court misinterpreted the law and didn't correctly apply the law is a legal error, and that throws it back to you.
Well, actually, unfortunately, all of our case law says opposite of what you just said when it comes to apply the law. Application of law to a given set of facts is outside the scope of our jurisdiction.
Yeah, tell us how we should interpret the law correctly without talking about the facts of your case.
Well, to interpret the law correctly, you would say that it's the obligation of the BVA and the Court of Veterans Appeals to examine the entire record and to make a determination whether or not the entire record was complete back at the time that the original decision was made. Both the board and the Court of Veterans Appeals failed to examine the entire record and therefore failed to apply the law correctly. And you don't have to get to what the facts are going to balance out to, where Judge Moore was isn't probably a whole lot more than possibly. But if the decision in 1992 before this court doesn't discuss it whatsoever, so we're not arguing about what the facts are because the facts aren't in the decision. So it's a legal error to write a decision that's void of all of the facts that you're using as the underlying basis of your decision. So the original decision by the rating officer violates the regulations in the law because they have to consider everything, and in order for you to know all these years later that they did, they have to talk about everything. They didn't do that.
Well, counsel, I got to cut you off. We're outside of our time. I thank all the lawyers. This case is taken under submission.